We heard him coming back from pasture, tenderly chiding his animals and calling them by name. Such unspeakable brutality, marching with such soft affection. The gods will have their little jokes. Once again, he drove in the herd and rolled the stone over the cave's entrance before sitting to milk the ewes and she-goats. I had planned to approach him the moment he finished and begin the conversation I'd sketched out in my mind. But he too quickly moved from putting down the last ewe to picking up two more of my men. Their brains were dashed out and he was washing them down with another pail of milk before I could do anything. Could I have saved them? You'll understand when I say that I still wrestle with that question at night, on the nights when sleep is slow to come. I stepped forward, bearing a wooden cup of the Siconian wine, undiluted. "Great one," I said, "you may not know how to behave like a host, but I know how to behave like a guest. Here is wine to accompany your meal of human flesh." He snatched the cup and drank the wine down.
"Damn, that's good," he gasped. "Pour me another and tell me your name. I have a valuable gift for you."
I poured him another cup, and another, and one more. When I was confident that he was befuddled by the wine's strength, I spoke up. "Cyclops, I shall tell you my name, as you have asked, and in return I will demand the gift you promised me. My name is Nobody. Nobody. My family, friends and comrades all call me Nobody."
"Nobody, eh? Well, Nobody, here's your gift. Your gift is..."
He tittered and hiccuped.
"Your gift is that I shall eat you last of all."
And with that, his eye rolled up and he fell backwards in a dead stupor. His laugh turned into a heave, and the heave now erupted in a great torrent of vomit. As his head hit the ground, a river of wine gushed from his throat. Amongst it, pieces of human flesh. It was all we could manage not to throw up, too. Once the rhythm of his thunderous snoring had started up, I made for the corner, picked up the pole, and pushed its end into the fire, this time to roast it red hot. Green and young as the olive wood was, it almost caught fire. I pulled it out, summoned my four men. They took the pole, raised it up, and thrust the point straight down into the Cyclops' eye. I took hold of the other end, twisting and twisting, my entire body weight bearing down. The glowing tip pierced his eyeball, which fizzed, hissed, sizzled, and then exploded in a fountain of blood. He let out a roar that shook the cave. The animal screamed. Leaping to his feet, he stamped about, pulling out the pole and screeching like his terrified livestock. The terrible din raised the neighbouring Cyclopes, who thundered towards the cave and crowded around its sealed entrance.
"Polyphemus, what is it?"
So he had a name, did he?
"What's happening?"
"Who's in there with you, Polyphemus?"
"Nobody!"
Polyphemus shouted back.
"Then what's up?"
"Nobody has tricked me, and nobody is trying to kill me."
"Oh, well, if nobody is hurting you, you must be having some kind of dream. Say a prayer. Go back to sleep. That's my advice."
"But nobody has blinded me,"
sobbed Polyphemus.
"Probably drunk,"
I heard one of the Cyclopes remark as they moved off.
"Never could take his wine."
"Nobody gave me strong wine!"
I couldn't help hugging myself. We seven darted easily out of his way as he banged about the cave trying to locate us. He had accidentally stamped the life out of four of his precious goats before he gave up. Weeping with fury, he yelled out,
"I know you're hiding back there somewhere, nobody. You and your friends will never escape. I'll count every animal out. I'll bite your arms and legs off one by one and laugh as you scream."
This gave me much to ponder. Then, during the night, another brainwave. While Polyphemus slept, I made my way to the pen where he kept his rams. They were big, strong animals, strong enough, I calculated, to bear the weight of a man. Taking bunches of willow twigs, I tied the rams together, three abreast. It took me most of the night to do this 6 times, but it was worth it. I told the men to grab the thick belly fleece of the middle ram in each trio and hang there, face up. There was one ram left over, a black one, the largest of them all. I got myself under him and hung on too. By the time dawn broke, the rams had become accustomed to us clinging on to their bellies and made no fuss. We heard Polyphemus stagger to his feet, groaning and swearing in his miserable blind agony. It was pathetic, but earned no damn sympathy from me. All I could think of were the 6 good men he had killed and eaten. Somehow he managed to do the milking and even make himself some kind of breakfast. At last he rolled the rock away and daylight flooded the cave. Through the thick wool of my ram, I could just make him out squatting in the opening and calling his animals to him. Where once the eye was, there was now nothing but glistening mush edged with dried blood. As each goat or sheep came forward, they seemed to nudge and nuzzle him lovingly, as if they knew something was wrong. He cooed and cradled them, feeling their backs to make sure that nobody was riding them out to freedom, or rather that nobody wasn't riding them out to freedom. When the groups of rams 3 wide trotted up, I held my breath.
"What? All crowding through at once? So keen to be out of here, are we?"
He ran his hands over their backs, but not, the gods be praised, underneath. When the last trio was through, it was my turn. The great beast I was hanging under must have been a favourite, for he stopped it and buried his head in the fleece of his back.
"Oh, Probatos, Probatos. But you are never the last to leave. You can tell something's wrong, can't you? That bastard nobody," he shouted to the back wall. "You can hear me, nobody. I know you can. I'll find you, split your skull, and smear your brains all over the wall of this cave. And Probatos here will drink your blood."
With that, he smacked the animal on its back, pushed it out, and rolled the boulder back into position. Probatos, perhaps a little unnerved by my weight and his master's unusual behaviour, bucked and skittered his way over the rocks at the mouth of the cave before charging full pelt for the fields. I let go and rolled free onto the grass. My men were up ahead, running and laughing. We rounded up all the sheep and goats we could manage, drove them down to the shore, and loaded them on our ship. All we had to do now was row to the harbour where the other 11 vessels of the fleet were waiting for us. But oh no, I just couldn't help myself. We were all safely aboard and still within hailing distance of the shore when I turned and saw Polyphemus stumbling about, calling in vain for his flock. From the stern post, I yelled at the top of my voice,
"That'll teach you to ignore the sacred rites of hospitality! Zeus has punished you!"
The Cyclops wrenched away a whole section of the top of the cliff with his bare hands and hurled it towards us. It overshot our ship, but landed with such force that the resultant wave nearly pushed us back to shore. The men redoubled their efforts with the oars, and we got ourselves clear. But again, I couldn't resist taunting the Cyclops. The men tried to shush me, but my blood was up. "Seriously, Captain, he may not be able to see, but he can hear and locate us. Please, sire, you saw what the last rock nearly did to us?" I was pumped with such pride and with such fury at the horrible deaths of six good men that the combined persuasive powers of my wife Penelope and my mother Anticlea could not have deterred me.
"Hey!"
I yelled back to the shore.
"Let it be known that my name isn't Nobody. Only a dribbling imbecile could have believed that. You can tell the world you were bested and blinded by none other than Odysseus of Ithaca."
I know, far from modest. Polyphemus groaned and sent up a prayer.
"Father, Earthshaker and God of the Sea, this is your son Polyphemus. May Odysseus never find passage home, or if the fates decree that he must return to his family, may he do so only after years of torment and misery, alone with all his treasure, companions and ships lost. And may he find his home blighted and tormented. Hear me, O Father Poseidon, tempest-maker and tamer of horses! Hear my curse!"
I don't want to spoil my tale, good people, but I don't think I'm giving too much away when I say that Poseidon did hear, and heard clearly. Poseidon was indeed the father of Polyphemus by the nymph Thusa, which might have promised a more becoming and winsome appearance and manner. Theseus and the winged horse Pegasus were also progeny of the sea god, and they each had two eyes and appealing appearances. Life just didn't treat Polyphemus very fairly. The enraged ogre summoned all his strength to hurl one more gigantic clod of earth at us, but we were too far ahead, and it fell short, sending a surge that helped propel us towards the inlet and the rest of the fleet. Eurylochus and the others were thrilled to see us, of course. They had been on watch for 2 days and nights in a state of the greatest anxiety, but they grieved at the loss of their six comrades, whom Polyphemus had killed and eaten with such brutal depravity. We sacrificed the great ram who had been my saviour, sending the smoke from his seared flesh up to Zeus in thanksgiving for our safety and praying for the souls of our companions, whose earthly remains we had been unable to honour with burial.